going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Black ownership in the U.S. is the lowest it's been in more than 50 years. This as white, Asian, and Latino home ownership is on the rise. Is there a crisis for black home ownership in America? And what can be done about that? Well, joining me to talk about this are Lisa Wright. She is president of the National Fair Housing Alliance, and Ronnie DeVoe, member of the R&B group Bell Biv DeVoe, and he is president of DeVoe Real Estate out of Atlanta, Georgia. Lines are open if you have a comment or a question. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Thank you both for joining me.
Good morning. Good evening. Good evening.
long day for you, huh, Lisa?
It has been a long. Oh my gosh, it's been a long several weeks.
Yes, indeed. Well, let's get to some of these issues. What's going on with black home ownership in America?
Well, since 2004, Harold, the black home ownership rate in the United States has been dropping. The African American community experienced the foreclosure crisis at the micro level before the crisis hit at the macro level in 2008. The African American and Latino communities were sort of the canaries in the coal mine, if you will. And while other segments of our community and society have bounced back from the foreclosure crisis, unfortunately, when it comes to home ownership, African Americans have not, and we have been experiencing a steady decline. And so the number, the percentage, the home ownership rate for African Americans hit the lowest level, a record low, the lowest point that it had been in the past 50 years at 40.6%, which, Harold, is lower than the home ownership rate was 50 years ago when the Fair Housing Act was passed and when redlining was legal.
So what's happening? Is the situation that we are seeing with African Americans now, is this the residual effects of the Great Recession, or is there something else going on here?
There's something else going on. It's both the residual effects of the Great Recession, but it is also, Harold, quite frankly, centuries of policies, discriminatory policies, racialized policies that have been passed down through the decades and have created a structural system of inequality and inequity. I mean, think about it from this perspective, Harold. Throughout the entire history of our nation, we have had policies and legislation passed that were racialized. Even think back to the Constitution when it was stated that African Americans were only 3/5 of a person. So think of all of the laws that have been passed. The National Highway Act, the Social Security Act, the Homeowners Loan Corporation Act, the National Housing Act, and I could go on and on and on. All of those laws were passed with a racialized lens to them. African Americans could not access the benefits of those programs, and oftentimes those programs were designed in ways to expressly keep African Americans in particular and other communities of color from being able to access those benefits while simultaneously being designed to support and help white families. So it created structural systems, residential segregation, the dual credit market, and these kinds of structural systems and inequities that are still existent today. We are still hyper-segregated. Communities of color still lack access to opportunities. So put it to you this way, Harold, if you give me your address, I can tell you everything about you. I can tell you how much money you make. I can tell you your chances of being incarcerated. I can tell you whether or not you've graduated from high school. I can tell you whether or not your kids are going to go to college. I can tell you your net worth. I can tell you your credit score if you give me your address.
But isn't
I can tell you your health outcomes. And that is because in America, because of this legacy of discrimination, race and place are inextricably linked to opportunity.
But and you could argue that just like the old TV series 90210, you can tell what's happening in a particular community based on the zip code.
Based on the zip code and based on the racial composition of that area. Harold, right now, today, high income. So this is not an issue of income. High income black neighborhoods. Banks are closing branches in high-income black neighborhoods at a higher rate than they are closing branches in low-income non-black neighborhoods.
We are talking with Lisa Rice and Ronnie DeVoe. Both of them are part of a new initiative, a national campaign to help turn the numbers of black home ownership in America around. Ronnie, thanks for joining this conversation. Of course, everyone knows you from Belle Biv DeVoe and your entertainment career. But what people really probably don't know is your real estate business. Talk to me a little bit about that and how that applies to this move to turn black home ownership around, not just where you are in Atlanta, but across the nation?
Man, that's a heavyweight question, and I love it, man. I'm taking all punches, man. Harold Fisher, thank you.
Absolutely.
For everything that you're doing right there in the community, community to put issues and topics like this on a platform for people that are like-minded. You know, we're seeking information, we're seeking knowledge, we're trying to get this thing called life right, and nobody is perfect, neither one of us. So for me, just understanding what I was able to do with a thought at 10 years old, Boston, Massachusetts, a place that you're not supposed to make it out of, right? The inner city. There's so many traps and pitfalls that they set for you. And Lisa alluded to some of those things in a systematic way, right? Like, the cards are stacked against all of us. But for me, you know, whether it was watching the Beverly Hillbillies or the Brady Bunch, like something in me said to my mom, I'm going to move our family at 10, right? I didn't know how it was going to be done, but the thought, you know, I kind of spoke it into existence. Fast forward, like you said, no addition, 1983, 15, 16 years old now, right? And the light is being shined. And move forward about a year and a half after that, after making money, I was the first one, not only out of no addition, but the first one, as far as my eyes could see, in my family, up and down, you know, grandparents, great grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins, second cousins, you know, home ownership wasn't even a thought. That wasn't even a topic of discussion. And by the time I was 17 and a half, 18, I was able to buy my mom our first house, right? And in hindsight, I didn't even understand the magnitude of the transaction, right? But 1987, $200,000, the hills of Woodland Hills, California, you know, on the south side. So these homes are more exclusive and prestigious, and they hold their value, right? $200,000. Almost 3 years later, I sold that home for double the amount of money, $400,000, right? Now I'm on the road with no addition, like you said, jumping around, doing what we do, entertaining people, and I love the gift that God blessed all of us with to do that, but I wasn't even thinking about the transaction and the generational wealth outside of New Edition that I was able to put in my back pocket and my mom's and my family's back pocket in that way. So just spreading that knowledge and hanging out with people like Lisa Rice and the people at NARAB, you know, the black institution that makes sure we have reports like the Sheba Report, which tells us that since the Fair Housing Act was passed in the late 60s, we're under where we were then after enacting all of these fabulous things. So when are we going to be At what point do we get this information to our people and sit down with our kids early?
Well, Ronnie, let me stop you because I have some questions for you because
I'm passionate about this thing. Sorry,
and that is exactly why I want to ask you. So as someone who is now in the real estate business in Atlanta, what are you observing about African Americans and home ownership? And certainly we are talking about, you know, Atlanta. It is still considered for African Americans economically one of the lands of milk and honey. But do they know
Mecca.
Right, yes. Exactly. But do they know what you would hope that they know, not only about home ownership, but generational wealth, considering the low numbers we've been talking about already?
Right. So, no, we don't, right? And that's what it is that we're looking to do. So when I see Atlanta, I see what I saw up in Boston in the 80s, right? They were giving away townhomes in Boston in a program for a dollar, right? The South End Cathedral Projects, right next door from where I grew up at. Liquor stores and all these different things right there on the corner back then in the 80s, right? Dilapidated townhomes, blah, 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 right? So they're selling these things for a dollar, and you had to put a certain amount of money into them to rehab them, right? But now, those same townhomes that they were selling for a dollar, and maybe somebody had to put $50K into it to bring it up to code, those same townhomes, brownstones are worth $3 and $4 million fast forward, right? And that was the project. Now there's sidewalk cafes and all of these fabulous parks and amenities that people are enjoying. So number one, in the place that we were highly concentrated, we're being pushed out, and all of us don't understand that. So now we're trying to spread the word and let people know, like, how do we keep the stuff that we have, you know, and certain things are being put into place, whether it's raising taxes, you know, at a time where people are living check to check, and something like that is the difference, you know. We're being pushed out in ways like that. So getting the education and making sure that we have the side money to be able to weather the storm during, you know, recession times and have that patient money. That was one of the things I learned. I went to the Congressional Black Caucus for the first time, right, this year as a businessman. And I heard the terminology patient money for the first time, and that connected a lot of things for me.
Okay.
So, yes.
Well, 202, hold on for a second, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about black home ownership and why the numbers are so low and what can be done to turn that around. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Lisa, give me kind of an overview of this national campaign.
So we're going to be going to kick it off in Washington, D.C. on November the 10th at Busboys and Poets, but we're going to 10 cities, and it will be a full-day event. These will be full-day events, Harold. And so in the morning, what we're going to do is focus on policies that can be enacted at the state and the local level to help expand equal housing and credit opportunities, because we have a lot of barriers. And we can talk about those more in detail later. But so in the morning, we're going to be focused on the kinds of policies that legislators and local elected officials can put in place to help people access homeownership opportunities. And then in the evening, we're going to do a consumer-facing events in which we will pull the public in, so the consumer in, to give them data, to give them information, to empower them with the knowledge that they need, the resources that they need, the connections, the networks that they need, so that they can take advantage of the programs that are out there, but also so that, Harold, quite frankly, when they get homeownership, they can maintain homeownership. Because the issue that Ronnie was talking about that happened in Boston, quite frankly, it happened all over the country.
That's right.
What we saw at unprecedented levels, Harold, was that particularly African Americans and Latinos who either owned their homes or already had good quality, sustainable loans were disproportionately steered into subprime loans that were designed to be unsustainable, which is why African Americans and Latinos were disproportionately harder hit by the foreclosure and financial crisis.
Do you believe that the situation that you just mentioned, in addition to the residual effects of the Great Recession, have frightened some African American communities who can afford to be homeowners from doing so?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right now, today, Harold, there are over 1.5 million, and this data comes to us from the Urban Institute, there are over 1.5 million black millennials who earn over $100,000 per year who are not homeowners. They are homeowner ready. They have the credit score they need. They have the income they need. They are not purchasing housing. And one of the reasons why they're not purchasing houses is because they saw their parents go through foreclosure, and they are gun-shy.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Ben from Maryland, quickly, what's on your mind?
How you doing? This is a very complex conversation, but I want to see, ask if you can address kind of the systemic racism and the fact that as a community, especially, and I'm going to talk about the African-American community, that we're not actually preparing our community starting in this early ages of elementary, middle, and high school in terms of changing their mindset on what it is to be a homeowner, what it is to prepare for a future of raising their children, themselves, their children, their family, and bringing them into home ownership. I'm a teacher, and a lot of kids and say they want to have a house. But when you ask them, how do you get to that point, they don't have an answer for that. And it, you know, as a child, if you don't never get that answer, you become an adult without an answer.
Ben,
so I just want you to address that.
Ben, I need you to hold on because I'm going to take a break, and I'm going to get not only Lisa, but we're also going to get Ronnie to chime in on that question. So please stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. The Daily Drum will continue in just a few seconds. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. But we are still taking your phone calls at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. And as always, information about this national campaign targeting black home ownership will be on our website on WHUR.com in addition to the podcast. So please stay with us. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we're talking about a new campaign targeting the low numbers of black home ownership in America. My guests are Lisa Rice, president of the National Fair Housing Alliance, and Ronnie DeVoe, of course, a member of the R&B group Biv DeVoe, but he's also president of DeVoe Real Estate out of Atlanta, Georgia. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Lisa, before the break, our caller was asking about attitudes about home ownership. Talk to me a little bit about that, and then Ronnie, also you, but Lisa, you're first.
Well, the caller is absolutely right. You learn oftentimes about how to manage your finances and how to matriculate the financial marketplace from your parents, quite frankly. And if your parents have never done that, then it's difficult for you to learn how to do that. I mean, I think that Ronnie in his own life story, talked about that just a few minutes ago, right? Just somewhere out of his mind when he was 10 years old, he told his mother, I'm going to buy us a house. Where did that idea come to him, a 10-year-old child who never saw his parents buy a house, never saw anyone in his family buy a house? That's the unique situation. Most of us are not a Ronnie DeVoe. Most of us learn about these issues from our parents, and this is why we want to take this knowledge to people. We're going to have these consumer-facing events where we will put people in touch with housing counseling organizations. We will put them in touch with lenders who are good, who are not going to take advantage of them, insurance companies who are not going to take advantage of them, real estate professionals who are patient and who will work with them to make sure that they are home buyer ready.
Mm-hmm. Ronnie, without your musical success early on, do you believe that if your life had gone in another direction, that you would have been able to become a homeownership, much less buy your mother a house?
Yes. It would have happened somehow. It would have happened somehow. When you believe at some point, when you believe and when you're willing to put in the work, those two things together, at some point when you find your passion, it's going to come alive. And one of the ironic thing is when I was in high school, maybe around the 10th grade, I took a drafting and architecture course. So, you know, drafting and architecture, they don't have that course in very many inner city schools. But I was in a program called the METCO program, which bused inner city schools out to the suburbs, right? So from fourth grade on, I was Newton North, the most expensive rebuilt school in Massachusetts. They actually stopped. They put some kind of action plan in place to say we cannot spend that kind of money on the school anymore. But anyway, so drafting and architecture, right? I really began to have a passion for that. But then here we go, a year and a half later, New Edition jumps off. So of course, I didn't get the chance to follow that path. But when we kind of, you know, had a lull in our existence, it was like, where's my passion? Like, what is Ronnie DeVoe going to be known for outside of New Edition? And in California, I began to think about real estate. Okay, investing, right? But then I'm like, there's a glass ceiling in Cali at this point. Like, I need to go to Atlanta, a place that I felt like D.C. is the black mecca. You know, Atlanta is the black mecca of the South, right? There's new energy, opportunity, and all of the above there. And that's what led me to being on the real estate side. But I wanted to speak to the gentleman's point, too. Like, just me being a reflection of every individual, every child out there, honestly, because I'm from those same circumstances. So when I speak, when I get in front of any one of them, even if it's on the block or I'm at the supermarket and somebody smiles and says they saw the New Edition story, I'm a reflection of them. So at any point, if they have the knowledge and then, you know, the understand the tools to be able to get from point A to Z, from point A to B, which is finding a passion, you know, making sure that it's secured and generational wealth for my family so I can help them and help others. And the earliest they can learn that, I'm talking about at my sons are two, and I'm trying to teach them how to write or sign a check or what have you. And, mm-hmm. and as soon as possible, how can we balance the checking account? Like, we can't wait until high school. We can't wait until kindergarten, even sometimes, to begin to teach them about things that they can actually learn. Their brains are sponges.
So, yeah, so you're essentially talking about, you know, financial literacy at an early age, and I think that's right. A really good point. I want to thank our caller for calling in. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. One of the things, Lisa, that I did want to ask you about, though, as it relates to attitudes and home ownership at the youngest of ages, 20, I think the reality is that people in their 20s and the like, even if they have perhaps the income, it's just like car ownership. When you have Uber and Lyft, why do I need to buy a car when all I need is an app to get around? And so why do I need to own a house if I can get a nice apartment and just pick up the phone and have someone repair the plumbing or fix a window or any of the other things without me having to at least appear to pay for it with the rent? So how do you convince someone that home ownership is the key to so many other parts of your financial future?
That is the tough sell. Quite frankly, with this millennial population, it's a real tough sell. One of my colleagues, whose daughter is a millennial, he attended her college and was listening to all of their friends say exactly what you're just saying, Harold. You know, the convenience of living in an apartment, the convenience of living in a high activity urban community is what you know, the hot thing is. But here's the reality. Home ownership still today is the number one way to generate wealth, and in particular, intergenerational wealth. Home ownership is the number one way for people to establish new businesses by utilizing the equity in their homes. Home ownership is the number one way for people to send their children to school by utilizing and accessing the equity in their homes. When you look at a graph of what generates wealth, home ownership is by far the number one wealth generator in the nation. And that makes sense, Harold, because that's how our nation was founded. We weren't founded like a Great Britain. We weren't founded like an Ireland or a France or a Spain, right? The United States, unfortunately, I mean, it is what it is. We were founded by stealing land from Native Americans and then giving it, parceling it up
and
giving it, developing it and giving it to immigrants, white immigrants, quite frankly, as they came to this country. And to be honest, that's why people came here, was because they could. You couldn't buy any land in Great Britain, but you could come to the United States and own land if you were the average Joe. And so it's still the number one wealth generator in America. But to Ronnie's point and the gentleman who called earlier, we don't teach financial literacy in school. So where are our children going to learn this critical information if they don't learn it from their parents and don't learn it at home? So we have to create these other vehicles of educational opportunities so that our young people will learn how to access this vital asset. Think about it this way, Harold. The overwhelming majority of African Americans are not homeowners. So how can they teach their children how to be homeowners?
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Naja, calling from D.C. Naja, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
How you doing this evening? Thank you for letting me speak.
Sure, go right ahead.
So I have some questions about the ethics of, like, our black realtors, too. I have a lot of my peers who graduated with me, and they have, like, real entrepreneurial spirits, and they're getting into the realty game. And what I find, though, is that they use a lot of our already black homeowners as like the low-hanging fruit to advertise and to go to and to say, hey, we can sell your house for this dollar amount. I've been in D.C. since like 2009 in that Shore neighborhood, and I've seen the drastic change happen. And a lot of those, the people who are selling those houses were realtors, black realtors. How can they ethically be better at making sure that they're getting the best deals for their clients and not just accelerating this gentrification of like these neighborhoods, because they're the ones like really selling grandmama's house. Recently I was supporting a black realtors event that they had in DC, and that was one of the questions that they had, and they were like, hey, your responsibility is to your client, but if they feel like the black homeowners that we have now is the low hanging fruit and they can easily sell their houses to their white counterparts or the people who are coming in and gentrifying these neighborhoods, how can we ethically win
Let me pose that question to my guests, and I think he makes a really important point, Lisa. How do you balance the ethics of being a real estate agent, broker, developer with the dog eat dog world? Because if you don't, as he suggested, pick the low hanging fruit, someone else will.
That's absolutely right. But there's a way to do it. You can do it responsibly, right?
That's right.
And I think that that's one of the reasons why Ronnie is working with us on this homeownership tour. One of the things that he wants to do in every city that we go to is use NARAB, the National Association of Real Estate Brokers, which is the oldest fair housing organization in America, but it's also one of the oldest real estate trade associations.
Yes.
In order to pull black real estate entrepreneurs together and educate them about just what this young man is talking about.
Ronnie, briefly, how do you deal with that? Because I'm sure you don't operate in a vacuum. You've probably come up against some members of the business community whose ethics may be, may give you pause, may force you to give them the side eye.
That's true. Yes, indeed. I mean, that's life in general. When you look at the presidential position in the last, let's say, 12 years, you know, give or take, you see where ethics lie in one and on one end of the spectrum and the other. And that is for real estate. That is for technology. That's for everything in existence, right? And you just have to be the light that shines on the situation. And for us, it's education. Like, education is really the key. I went to a class the other day about land acquisition, right? 3-hour CE. And maybe people think that I have all the knowledge that I need and I'm powerful and I'm successful, but without staying in tune and making sure that you're doing things the right way, you will cross the line, and you have to look at, okay, how would you treat your family member? Unfortunately, there are people that don't give a damn about that in life, but how do you minimize that in a way where you're spreading love, spreading joy, spreading the right spirit and energy? And that's what it is that we're trying to do with having these events and using entertainment in a way, you know, to make people feel good about this education ultimately that they're getting.
And the other, you know, education really is, knowledge is power. And it's one of the reasons why we're taking this knowledge and education to the consumer.
Right,
because at
right.
the end of the day, whatever transaction you engage in, Harold, the person who is the professional at the end of the day, they have superior knowledge over you. So you've got to be on your P's and Q's in order to engage in that transaction so you're not taken advantage of.
Thank you so much, Naja, for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Before I go back to the phone lines, when you talk about generational wealth, and Ronnie talks about patient money, I just want to throw this out to, you know, our listeners, because this is one of the more critical issues that a lot of people don't know about. There is something in America, in some communities in America, called ground rent. And I would encourage you to Google ground rent, specifically ground rent in Baltimore City, but other places. And you talk about generational wealth, where you're talking about generations and generations, and I'm talking dozens and dozens of generations of families in the Baltimore metro area. They have owned a plot of land where a house that an individual owns sits on. And while the individual may own the house, they do not own the land. And even if they purchase that house, there is something in the bill of sale for that house and the HUD 1 and all of those other things called ground rent, where you may be paying a what appears to be a small fee, monthly, quarterly, or yearly, to someone that owns that land, that has owned that land for more than 100 years. And you talk about generational wealth to those landowners, and there is a possibility that you can buy that for a fee if you can find the families. But that's another, but that, you know, I really encourage people to look up news stories regarding ground rent in Baltimore. It is a complex, it is a fascinating story, but I think it goes to the heart of this issue that we're talking about right now related to generational wealth. And I think, you know, Ronnie was about to, he was talking about land. What did Oprah say? Like they, keep the land because they're not making any more.
That's right. They're not making any more of it. That's the only thing that, although, and some people get nervous, right? But that's where patient capital or patient money comes into play. Like if you have the right plan in place, and let's say, you know, somebody tells you that you can afford a $200,000 home, right? Mm-hmm. But when you look at your finances and where things are, you know, you have patient money. You have a patient demeanor and spirit, right? Let me go get the house for $120,000, right? And so that in a downturn, I can sustain, because life, you know, goes around in circles and circles. The real estate game is cyclical. It peaks and valleys, and it keeps spinning and spinning. But the one thing about it is the next time it comes around, if you have that patient money and you're sitting right, it always goes higher. So it appreciates, you know, continuously. The house, the price of a house in 1901 versus the price of a house today is very different. I'm sure we all can agree, right?
Absolutely.
And what Lisa is saying is how do we not have a piece of that generational wealth, like running through every artery in every city across America with everything that are the conveniences of life, right? Transportation, you talk about land leases and 99-year leases. MARTA here in Atlanta, you know, are on the verge of doing these land leases, you know, over with air rights over their properties. And they already have this thing called Lindbergh Station where they've tried it, right? I'm talking multi-use, like restaurants, apartments, townhomes, nightlife, everything, like building a whole new city. So, like you said, that lends to a government entity leasing their land out for 99 years if you stay true to your payments and all of the above. So there's so much information out here, and we can't be the ones not getting it when others are. And not to say, you know, we're hating on anybody, but for our white brothers and sisters to have 75% home ownership and our Asian brothers and sisters to have damn near 80 or plus, how are we sitting at 40? Like, that's unacceptable. That's unacceptable.
Let me go back to the phone line, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Oba on the line. Oba, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Oh, thank you, Harold, man. I was so excited to get on this phone. I wasn't even about to turn the program on. I was on my way to rehearsal. I said, you know what? These guys are going to be late. I'm a keyboardist, all this good stuff. First, man, respect to the panel. Harold, you always bring the topics. I'm going to be quick. I love the three-fifth compromise talk, all that. I talk to all my black brothers and sisters about it. We're behind the eight ball for 200-300 years, right? So my question is, how do we interrupt this gentrification, which I also say is at the hands of the black church, because a lot of money we put in tithes and offerings goes to the black church, which goes to the white banks that don't lend back to us. Can y'all address that?
Lisa?
Yeah, I'm so glad that you asked that question. A couple things. Let me start at the individual first and then make it broader and talk about the churches and the role that our faith-based institutions can play in this. But one of the things that we're encouraging people to do throughout this campaign is to focus on that asset that is appreciating rather than focusing on the asset that is not appreciating. You know, a lot of times our young urban professionals, once they get that job, they go out and they want to buy that Beamer. They want to buy that Mercedes. They want to kind of, you know, have a little bling. And one of the things that we're supporting is NAREB's House Then Car initiative. Because the reality is, as soon as you buy that brand new car and drive it off the lot, it depreciates the second you drive it off the lot.
You couldn't resell it for what you paid for it 5 seconds after you drove it off the lot.
Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. Buy that little Camry, buy that little Hyundai, whatever the moderate price car is, buy that moderate priced car and put your money in an appreciating asset like real estate and try to get the real estate that is going to appreciate at a good level. So there are things like that that we can teach people that they may not really know. The two things that are holding blacks back from purchasing homes, Harold, student loan debt and car debt. So we have a lot of information to give people about student loan debt and how to handle that, as well as auto debt. Now let's talk about the faith-based institutions. One of the things that churches are doing here in D.C. and in Atlanta and other places is they are turning their edifices into wealth-building opportunities and home housing opportunities for the people who live in their communities, who might be suffering from or experiencing gentrification. So we have two great examples here right in D.C., Riverside Baptist Church on the Wharf. Now, Harold, you know what the property values have done on the Wharf. And here is a church who said, you know what, we have an edifice. And to Ronnie's point, we may not have a lot of land around us, but we have a lot of air above us. And they partnered with a developer to build up. And there are affordable housing units in that development. So they actually are renting at a very affordable rate to some families. Now, not all of the units are affordable, but a number of them are. There's a church not too far from here, from Howard's campus, that has done the exact same thing. And so our churches are learning that instead of selling that asset that's located in the gentrifying area, instead of selling it for several million dollars, build up and give people housing opportunities so they can stay in the neighborhoods and the communities that they love.
Oh, but thank you so much for your phone call. One of the things that I want to get to, you talked about this national campaign and some of the racialized policies that often are impeding black home ownership. And you've got a report coming out tomorrow that touches some of those issues. Can you give me some of the highlights of the report and how they affect black home ownership, for example?
Well, unfortunately, yes, we do. Our national, our annual trends report, Fair Housing Trends report, will be released tomorrow morning. A couple of really disturbing highlights, Harold. One, an unprecedented attacks on fair housing and civil rights. We also are seeing alarmingly high rates of housing discrimination. So there's an alarmingly high uptick in fair housing complaints, as well as hate activity that happens at the home. An almost 15% increase, year-to-year increase, in the number of hate crimes that have occurred at a person's residence, where that person lives. We also pay attention to tech bias. So we have
tech bias. What do you mean by tech bias?
So in the housing space, in the housing and financial space, we're relying on algorithmic based systems, credit scoring systems, automated underwriting systems, risk-based pricing systems, in order to handle the transactions, the functionality, right, to keep the wheels turning. Well, those algorithmic-based systems perpetuate discrimination and bias. In fact, yesterday, there was a major article that appeared in the Washington Post Herald that talked about an algorithmic-based program that we've been using in our hospitals and medical places. That algorithmic-based system has been manifesting bias and discrimination against African Americans and Latinos in particular. And the developers of the technology were shocked because when they put the variables together to go into the algorithm, they purposefully left out things like race and national origin and ethnicity, thinking that if they left out those kinds of variables, that the system would not generate bias. The problem is because of the structural racism and inequities replete throughout our marketplace, even if you don't consciously use race as an element in your system, you can still manifest discriminatory outcomes. One of the variables that they were using in this system was, how much money do you spend on healthcare? Right? If you don't spend a lot of money on healthcare, the system assumed that's because you weren't sick. The system didn't understand that a lot of people of color don't spend a lot of money on healthcare because there are no hospitals in their neighborhood. There are no doctor's offices in their neighborhood. There are no medical facilities in their neighborhoods. And so they're utilizing those services less. And so the systems can manifest bias on their own. And so we highlight this issue, and we highlight a major lawsuit that we brought against Facebook addressing algorithmic bias. We settled the lawsuit this year, and it provided for major changes across Facebook's platform to try and address this issue.
I only have about 2 minutes left. Ronnie, can you give me about a minute or so of your final thoughts on this issue?
Wow. No final thoughts at all, man. This is a continuation, and we're going to keep this train moving. For me, touring and entertaining people, excuse me, is something that I love to do. But I can't wait to tour with the information that we're putting together, fairs, kids' corners, to make sure that we're accessing our children at the same time and educating all of us. I hope everybody comes out. I'm sure, Lisa, it might even be sold out. I'm not sure what's going on with Busboys and Poets, but you already know the atmosphere there. I'm sure some of you have touched that place, and those are amazing people over there. So let's just continue this energy and pass out some websites. For me, DeVoe Real Estate, DeVoeRealEstate.com, you know, is everything about my passion. And then, Lisa, I know you have some things that you want to direct people to as far as...
Yeah, share with us, because I only have about a minute or so left. Share with us where and when, which Busboys and Poets...
14th and V, November the 10th from 5:30 to 7:30. If you visit our website, nationalfairhousing.org, that's nationalfairhousing.org, you'll see all of the information on our website about this amazing event.
There you go. And this is just the first of several that will be happening around the nation. But I want to thank both of you, Lisa Rice and Ronnie DeVoe. I really appreciate you talking to us. Keep up the good work. And hopefully we can change those numbers as it relates to black home ownership. That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141, for this Thursday, October 30th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.